Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. The rush of racing? Nothing beats it. But Chumba Casino comes close. Chumba's got fast spins, fun games, daily bonuses, and all the action you can handle. Now that's a ride. Ready to hit the throttle? Get in the driver's seat and head to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Good morning, Nashville. Get caffeinated because we got sports to talk about from 6 to 10 here on Robbie and Rex Road. I'm not Robbie, but I am Elijah Campbell, sitting in for Robbie alongside Joe Rexroad, Michelle Knezovic behind the glass. As always, here for another exciting 4 hours of sports talk. We got a lot going on today, talking Titans, talking Preds, Adam Vingan at 9, talking Preds for The Athletic, David Beauclair, friend of the show, SI.com at 8, the Rex Rant, and, of course, in this hour, the choice is yours, and your boy came up with some questions.
Nice.
I got a couple I'm actually excited about. So
okay,
we'll get a little adventurous here in about 45 minutes. But how are we doing this morning, gang?
Great. It's cold in here. I think it's going to be about 140 soon, but right now it's about 63.
Yeah, the gas baggery in here will definitely make it to where we at least start sweating from takes or the weather outside.
Is that what it is that makes it hot? I never thought about that. It is gas baggery, probably. That's at least a factor, right?
I mean, it's a theory. It's not proven. It's a theory. I know it doesn't get as bad behind the glass where Michelle is.
Yeah, it's great over here. We got the door open. We got a little box fan. But then I turn the box fan on and I get cold and then I get hot. Just can't really find a good temperature.
You guys at least have air moving.
Yes. Yeah. It's great back here.
Yeah. Have you guys and less gas baggery.
Less gas baggery. If my theory is true, then it's about to get really warm on this side. Have you seen where, like, okay, so there was an article, I think it was the Tennessean who published it, but it essentially read as a copy and pasted NES PR report or whatever, where it's basically – it's like saying ways to avoid over, you know, powering the power grid. Ways you can save on electricity. And it's like, keep your room set at 78 degrees in the middle of the day. And I'm like, you know what? How about no?
How about 68?
How about let's not set it at 78 and say we did? Because I like to breathe.
So that's an interesting point. So you in the middle of the summer, you put your AC at 68?
Heck yeah.
That's insane to me.
That's too cold?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Too
my mom
cold.
Keeps,
are you kidding?
My mom keeps the house, like, growing up, like, 68, 69, and I'd always be freezing, but...
But you grew up in New York.
Yeah. You grew up in Michigan, kind of.
Right, but we're in Tennessee now.
Yes.
So when it's 94 degrees and you walk into a house that's 68, you don't need that. I don't think. I mean, electricity bills in mind. I do fight with people in my household because my kids are always like, can we put it colder? But I put it 74.
Okay, you're not. That's not like actually. Yeah, 78 is a little warm. 74 is still a little warm.
No, don't take my kids' side. No,
I have to.
But see, you understand what I'm saying though. The contrast.
Mine's only an apartment that I have to make cold, not a full house.
Yeah. But I mean, if you come in from 90 degrees, 93 degrees or whatever, like 68 actually to me is too cold.
Oh, it's bleeping awesome.
But it's still,
okay. That's refreshing.
Fine. But 75 is too. It's a huge decrease in temperature.
Ever describe 75 in a house as refreshing?
We're taking your kids' side.
First of all, like
they're right.
My perfect temperature, like outside, is like 87. You know?
Ew.
Oh yeah. Now this is also where an aging body that just continue like cold bothers me more and more, and hot bothers me less and less. Now that's why everybody just keeps going south as they get older.
So like in 20 years,
except for the hardy souls who stay where I used to live, where I couldn't possibly live anymore.
They're just used to it at that point. So what you're saying is in like 20 years, you'll definitely be in Miami if it's not.
Yeah, that may be too cold by then. If I'm alive by then, yeah, I might have to be in like Chile.
You're going to get closer to the equator.
I'm going where? Yeah, yeah. Find me an equator city.
Yeah. See, I have to be the farthest from it. I just don't love hot weather. Don't love it. This is
wow. We're learning a lot about each other.
We are. Yeah.
Interesting.
And like, if you're asking me for the good of the power grid to keep my thermostat at 78, I'm going to respectfully decline.
Yeah, I mean 78. I would say that's a little high, but I've done 76 when it's crazy hot out, and it feels refreshing when you walk into it. It feels great, and you are saving money because you're not going to 68 and just crank it. You're right. If it's one room, then the difference is minimal compared to a house.
I need to sleep in an ice box.
Yes, and I'm the same way. If I'm not cold, I will not sleep well.
I like the fan on the face. That's the big thing for me.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
That would be a fair compromise. And the white noise.
All right. We can agree on that.
It's refreshing. We finally found some middle ground. We did it.
There we go. So the Titans.
You went to practice yesterday.
Yes, I did. I went to practice yesterday. We're going to talk a lot about Titans today. We're going to have Chigakonkwo on next hour. Beauclair, as you mentioned. Vingan. We'll do a little preds. Vingan is real quick, Vingan's on the bleep list, so he's
Adam is?
Oh yeah, he turned us down yesterday, and then I'm in the car listening to DDC.
Oh yeah,
and I immediately all caps. You went on the DDC, so yeah, he was going to be coming on today.
So you bullied him into coming on the show.
Absolutely,
bullied poor Adam Vingan, who is still mourning the loss of Duke getting beat by North Carolina in Coach K's last game in a Final Four, to get him on this show.
That's right. And thank you for bringing that up, because I haven't actually made fun of him for in a while.
That's
preposition issues there. But yeah, the Titans. The Titans. A lot of interesting things yesterday. It was when you go through weeks of rookie camp and OTAs and a lot of people missing. You know, when you see basically the full team, it's like, oh, and there's 22, and I swear 22 has added like another layer of muscle. I don't know. Like I'm like. Are you at some point? Is it possible to be too big to play running back? I mean, I'm sure he's going to be fine, but I'm like, dude, you could be a DT. You know,
I was going to say he could make a good linebacker. I mean, he can replace.
Well,
Rashawn
he could
Evans,
all. He always could have made
Evans
it,
right now.
Yeah, he always could have made a good linebacker. But I mean, he's getting into like maybe put the hand in the dirt. You
from
know?
One of the best rushing games to being one of the best run stoppers in the NFL. Derrick Henry could do it.
Right. So
he's a tank. I did see some videos. At least the foot looked a little better for what it's worth on these video clips. But he looked like he was ready to roll.
Well, I mean, the foot. I mean, is there any way to detect? I mean, was there any way to detect anything with the foot when he came back? I couldn't.
I could. He looked slower.
Well, okay, so
that explosive plant step, just like in the game against Cincinnati.
Yeah,
yeah. I feel like you didn't directly
saw a foot issue.
I saw him not having a second gear.
Yeah. Well, but is that a foot issue or is that
on your feet? Yeah.
But he's been off for 10 weeks. But what I'm saying, oh, you can see the foot's bothering him. Come on, you couldn't see that in the Cincinnati game.
Was Derrick Henry Derrick Henry? And I think that it could be being off 10 weeks, but also we see him come back in week one of some weeks of some seasons and play really well.
There were a couple carries where he looked a little bit ponderous, but I didn't. I mean, his burst, you know, they stacked the line. A year earlier, the exact same game happened for him. There'd never been no injury. The team, you know, the defense tackled him. I mean, I did not see. Oh wow, look at Derek. You can see he's. I didn't think so. But regardless. Whatever it was, if it was, if it wasn't, yeah, he's moving well. I mean, I don't think you're going to see. I don't. There's nothing to detect in terms of, impact on the foot to me. It's we'll see if he can keep a whole season going and do 25, 30 carries every week. I mean, he looks like the exact same guy, other than bigger. Everybody out there. Except for Jeff Simmons, who was on a bike. Except for Treylon Burks, who was on a bike. A couple other guys, too, but those are the key guys. So, Burks, something is going on with him physically.
Unavailable.
Unavailable, yeah. Vrabel's answer on both, just unavailable. No big surprise. But some very – actually, the guy we're going to have on later was, to me, one of the absolute standouts yesterday. Okonkwo's making plays out there. What does it mean in the fall? I don't know, but I feel like he's getting better, and he and Tannehill are building that chemistry. It's important. It's important to build that chemistry. It's important for Tannehill and Austin Hooper to build it. And it would be important for Tannehill and Treylon Burks to build it, but he's not out there right now. So Tannehill looks good. I mean, spring quarterbacks, NFL starting quarterbacks, typically probably look good this time of year.
I guess you're not getting hit.
If they're at mini camp. Yeah, I mean, but he's building chemistry with those guys. That's mostly what you're seeing is passing stuff. I like McCreary. I like what he's doing. He's getting beat sometimes, but he's aggressive. He has quick feet, getting good work in there. And like Caleb Farley, Robert Woods being involved in team stuff, a little bit surprising to me. Again, it's not full pads, it's not full contact, but when you can get caught in the wash with people. There was a moment where Woods and Derrick Henry smashed into each other, kind of like accidentally, and it was like neither of those guys you don't want either of those guys to hit anybody, no. And they just hit each other. But I think that's encouraging for Farley to be out there in doing team stuff. I mean, that's because we kind of knew the Woods thing was trending in a good direction, but Farley being out there to me was kind of interesting.
Now, Woods had his knee injury after Farley, right?
He did.
His timeline. Okay.
He did. Yes. You know, and but it's also with Farley, it's just sort of like the history of injury in general, where you're like, are you more careful with a guy like that?
Because it's not just his knee. Yeah. And like,
although he said last week, you know, thanks for bringing the backup. I hadn't thought about that in a while. So that's good. If that's the case, maybe he's past that. It's hard to get totally past back injuries, but he is out there. And so I think for the most part, you know, you got the Simmons not being around. Emily Proud, now we're talking yesterday. It's like, is this could this be a hold in? Which does happen sometimes. You show up, you don't get fined, but you don't go out there. But I don't know. I mean, he's on the bike. Who knows?
Hit him with the Marshawn Lynch. He's just here, so he doesn't get fined.
There you go.
I respect that. Respect the game there. Coming up next, we'll replay our conversation with Vinny Goodwill. Joe Rexroad and Joe Rexroad talked with Vinny about the NBA Finals, the Game 5 that was, and talk about whether or not this Warriors team is a dynasty. Good stuff with him from Yahoo Sports. You'll hear that on the other side as you listen to Robbie and Rexroad. ESPN 102.5, 106.3 The Game, The Game Nashville app. Game 6 of the NBA Finals will be tomorrow. And, of course, you can hear that here on 102.5, 106.3 The Game, The Game Nashville app, and our NBA Finals coverage powered by FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook. Yesterday, from Yahoo Sports, Vincent Goodwill covers the NBA for them, joined us to talk about the Warriors taking Game 5, what to look for the rest of the series, and what a potential Warriors dynasty would look like if they win. The Golden State Warriors survive an 0-for-9 three-point shooting performance from the greatest three-point shooter to ever live and still won an NBA Finals game by double digits, taking a 3-2 lead back to Boston, to the Garden. And to talk about it, Vincent Goodwill from Yahoo Sports. It's hard to feel enthusiastic if you're a Celtics fan and watching your team kind of miss that golden opportunity of Steph Curry not having a Steph Curry-like performance from the three-point shooting line, at least, in last night's game.
I mean, yeah, speaking of golden opportunity, yeah, that's a nice pun there, Joe Retro. So nice pull. I think, Joe, the Celtics fans will probably realistically feel like they could have won four out of the first five games of this series, and you can't play around like that in the seven-game series. Like, you're turning the ball over, you're having mental breakdowns, your best players aren't playing like your best players. It's almost like they didn't have the experience that they've had. And by that, I mean getting to the conference finals for, you know, four out of the last 6 years with Tatum and Brown being, you know, on the roster. And usually when you have that level of failure, once you get to the finals, you treat it as a gift. And it's almost like they feel like, man, we didn't get lucky getting here and beating, you know, Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving on whatever breakdown the Brooklyn Nets had, or beating Milwaukee without Chris Middleton and beating Miami in spite of. It's almost like they feel like, oh, yeah, we'll get back here again. We'll be the next Golden State. No, you won't. And I'll tell you this. I think that Boston is the better team, but I feel like there's no way they're going to win this series.
Yeah, it's that's one that they're going to they're going to regret that one, Vinny. Although I still, you know, I feel like last night you see role players at home, which you know is a basketball mm-hmm. thing, right? You see Peyton mm-hmm. have this huge performance. Even Poole, I mean, in just 14 minutes. Granted, you know, there's a reason he's only playing that much, right? I mean, defensively, Boston is going right at him, but he gave you a lot in that 14. And then Grant Williams, who has been so great in Boston, doesn't really give the Celtics anything. So I still think Boston, like, I still feel like they're going to summon a really good effort, have a good chance to win. But do you feel, Vinny, like there's an overall losing of the legs from that team because of the difference in depth between these teams and how much they've put on their main players?
Absolutely. And I think going through two grueling seven-game series before this, and you're playing in those series, they were playing every other day for basically a month. And we talk about the NBA season being long and the playoffs being a grind and everything else. It absolutely is. And that's why you have depth. And that's why it's a battle of attrition. That's why it's not always, quote-unquote, the best team who wins, but maybe the deepest team, maybe the team that knows how to handle, you know, adversity. It's not supposed to be easy. I think if you put the two teams together and you say, if there's perfect conditions, who wins? You would say the Boston Celtics. They have more tools in their tool bags. They're bigger. They're stronger. They're quicker to the ball. All of those little tangible sort of things that I just said. But when you say who's going to win the series, it's almost like Golden State recognizes what's in front of them. They recognize that, hey, we may not get back here again. The role players are eager to taste it for the first time. The older guys, even when Draymond loses it, right? Draymond, Clay, and Steph, they know how hard it is to get here, and they kind of appreciate getting back here. I'm just not sure that Boston has the capability to go beyond Tatum and Brown when they're struggling. Like, some guys, they can pull the nose up. You know what I mean? When the plane is going down. Some guys can pull the nose up and manufacture a great game out of a bad one. I don't know if Tatum and Brown have that level of basketball maturity yet. They may have it in a couple of years, but this window may not be open in a couple of years. That's why it's so these opportunities are so, so precious.
Speaking with Vincent Goodwill here from Yahoo, who's covering last night's Game 5. And Vincent, when I look at the game last night, and even Game 4 too, like one of my favorite storylines in this is kind of the resurgence of Andrew Wiggins, former number one overall mm-hmm. pick. It's very safe to say that he has underachieved in his career given the hype that he had coming out of high school and in college. But in a role in which it's, okay, Steph is being face guarded 94 feet down the floor. Three-pointers aren't falling. We need you to go out there and score when you can and grab rebounds because the Celtics' big lineups are killing them. Like, what have you seen from Andrew Wiggins? And has it been impressive to you to kind of watch this guy in his first real moment in the finals kind of get out of his comfort zone and play a role in rebounding that this team desperately needed him to do whenever they start playing small?
Joe, the funny thing is I've always barked back at the notion that an organization can change a player. You know, sprinkle some magic juice on of the Golden State Warriors on this player and he too shall be healed. You know what I mean? Like that miracle water that people sell at 2:30 in the morning when you're an insomniac and you can't sleep, and you're like, who's buying this nonsense? Clearly, that magic water has kind of worked on Andrew Wiggins. Like, let's be clear here. He's as talented as he ever was. Like, when you look at him jump and, like, you watch how graceful he is, you watch how easily he plays, how he seemingly never gets tired, and you're like, yes, you see why he was the number one pick. You see why he was picked in the draft over Joel Embiid and over Nikola Jokic. You completely understand that, but you also recognize that he's been placed in a position where he doesn't have to do that every night, where he's playing on a talented team that has a culture of accountability, that he can come in, and whether it's Draymond lighting the fire under his ass or Steve Kerr, who's not Ned Flanders, lighting the fire under his ass, he can rise to the occasion in a given moment, in a given game. Like, if you're expecting Andrew Wiggins to give you 27 and 10 every night, you're going to be disappointed. But I do think there's a level of maturity and a level of culture that's already there that he's just going to blend into. Some guys just literally blend in into whatever environment that they're in. If you place Andrew Wiggins right now back in another losing environment, you might wind up getting the same exact player that people were complaining about in Minnesota. But you put him in a winning environment, you put him somewhere where there's accountability, where there's standards inside the locker room, where guys push each other, and there's other excellent players that whose level he has to rise himself to get to, you might have another result like this. And I am beyond impressed with the resurgence or the reinvention of Andrew Wiggins. Almost, Joe, like in 2015, they had a guy who was miscast as a number one guy in Philadelphia and Denver. And then when Andre Iguodala mm-hmm. came to Golden State, he was like, oh, all I have to do is do the things that I do well. Oh, I will fit right in here next to Steph Curry. See, Warriors magic. Magic water, magic juice. You too shall be healed, Joe Retro.
Well, and it's a great point, and it brings me back too to, you know, Iguodala, that moment. I don't remember what game it was, but he was coaching Wiggins hard, you know, coming off the bench mm-hmm. at a particular moment. That's just like, it's just so valuable when you have that kind of, as you said, that culture. It also reminds me of like the opposite, which is like, I still think of how many great players, you know, who could have had totally different careers if they didn't play for the Detroit Lions, for example, you know, something that you can very well commiserate with. So, yeah, I mean, it's amazing what it means to be in certain places. But, Vinny, in your column, in your tweet about your column today, use the word, the D word, dynasty, which, I mean, I don't think that there's anyone who could argue otherwise if they finish the job. But how would you put in perspective if they do what this group has done over 8 years?
It's amazing to me, especially in the day of free agency, luxury taxes, player movement being more prevalent in this era than any other era of professional sports, let alone the NBA. The only thing I could compare it to is if the Boston Celtics of Bird, McHale, and Parrish had completed their very ambitious second generation, which would have included Lynn Bias mm-hmm. and Reggie Lewis. Yeah. And they were really, really, really close. Even after Lynn Bias passed in 1986 with number two pick in the draft and died of a cocaine overdose, after the Celtics went 67-15 and won the title, they got Reggie Lewis a couple years later, and he was coming along, and then he died of a heart attack on the tail end of Bird and McHale's career. That was over the course of 12 years, and you had a bunch of different guys come in and out, similar to Golden State. No, there's no Kevin Durant there. There's no Kevin Durant anywhere, but it's almost similar to that. And I compare it in that way because it takes a lot of foresight. It takes a player like a Stephen Curry who's the constant. It takes something really catastrophic happening too, let's be perfectly honest, in the way that the 2019 finals ended and the next season and everything else. But organizations have to take advantage and be able to pivot on the fly, and they've done that. And, yeah, they spend a lot of money and everything else, but guess what? Everybody else has an opportunity to spend a lot of money too and generate revenue and everything else. That team wants to win, and I've got no problem with teams that want to win. So if you win four titles in 8 years in this era, damn right you're a dynasty.
Vincent Goodwill from Yahoo Sports covers the NBA. Vincent, appreciate you coming on. Looking forward to Game 6 and seeing if the Warriors can secure title number 4 in the last 8 years.
You know what, Joe? If I was a Detroit fan, which I have not been since July 27th, 1999, that Lions comment would have hurt when I laughed.
Oh, I disavowed him long ago, too. We can all just have fun at their expense now.
It's good for your health.
My man, good for you guys.
Thanks, man.
Thank you, Vincent. Great stuff from Vincent. Always a blast. You looking forward to seeing this game, and we'll discuss more. I'm Joe Rexroad filling in for Robbie Stanley. You're listening to ESPN 102.5, 106.3 The Game, The Game Nashville app. We had some good takes with Vincent Goodwill from Yahoo Sports yesterday, who covers the NBA for them. But there have been some bad takes on this NBA final series. Some that are suboptimal, some that are downright gross, and some might just be considered a little lazy. And Joe Rexroad's ears were on fire hearing some of these. I have not been privy to exactly what they are, but I know Joe has there's been a tape quake, and it sounds like the epicenter of it might have been here in Nashville. Some of these NBA takes.
Well, it's just I've got to find this now. I'm once again unprepared. But
that's showbiz,
but
baby.
I put this in the grid because I saw. Oh, here we go.
Yes,
here we go. Skip.
Skip.
I mean, skip. It's almost like is it too obvious? Is it like really what do you? Okay, great. Like no duh, right? I mean, I go back to. Remember covering the Big Ten tournament in the year 2000.
Ah, the Michigan State's last championship, and I was in kindergarten.
That is true. But I remember because Skip Bayless wrote for the Chicago Tribune, and I remember, you know, reading a couple of his columns. Yeah, I was just in town, so you pick up the newspaper and read it. And I was like, this dude's whacked. What
Novel
is he
concept.
Talking about? So here's it. So is it too obvious? You know, not to rip on Vanderbilt University, fine, a graduate, and successful journalist. But he said, wait, the greatest shooter ever just went, and it's in caps, like it's fake. You know, like the greatest shooter ever. Just went 0-9 from three in a pivotal game five at home? ? And he will get a complete pass because his team won by 10? ? A complete pass.
Wow.
Like it's just like, so you are, and of course, I think the Bayless take that just endures for its stupidity, because he won't back off it, is the LeBron stuff, right?
Right. It is an obvious grift, yes.
Yeah, I mean, it's just.
The grift that keeps on grifting.
Well, I mean, I think it's also just the whole. It's just the refusal to accept new information. You know, this is right.
I mean, right? Yeah, it's doubling and tripling down on things that have already been proven past, like what your point of hypothesis is about a certain player.
Yeah, and it's so that's like that to me is the it's everybody's waiting to pounce, and this happens not just with Steph, it happens with a lot of people. I feel like in the NBA in particular, it's like this. You better do this, or you're not this, or yeah. Right?
I mean, narrative season in the NBA. It is worse than the NBA. It is a plague amongst NBA talking circles. A plague.
Right.
It is that bad. It is that annoying.
So I contrast that with, I think, my favorite writer, maybe, period? But I think this is actually why I subscribed to The Athletic, was for Marcus Thompson's writing. I don't know how much Marcus Thompson you read. Like you'd have to really want to read about the Warriors. Mm-hmm. You know, he's out.
Oh, he's awesome.
Yeah, he's fantastic. So here's like the actually knowing what's going on tweet compared to Skip's tweet. Curry had a bad shooting night from three, but had a really good game. He was plus 15. He had 8 assists with a turnover. He was great on defense. The Celtics were 3 of 11 when Curry defended, per NBA stats, at 7 for 23 on shots defended by Curry in games 4 and 5, 30.4% combined. So, again, basketball is a lot of things. Some
yes.
people have a hard time understanding that defense is half of the game. And
it's a very big part of it.
Steph Curry was really good, other than he didn't hit threes. So there's
yeah. –
There's your contract. And then the other one is Windhorse from ESPN saying this was a checkbook win for the Warriors. He's pulling out the they paid so much. Okay, I mean, do we not have a salary cap in the NBA? What are we talking about here?
It's just like it's annoying because like the whole thing is put in place for players to be able to stay because there's so much player movement in the NBA. The NBA has incentivized teams to overpay for players that they drafted to be able to keep them around. And that's exactly what the Warriors have done. They've done exactly right. What the NBA has begged teams to do.
Right. They want continuity.
Yes.
So they reward continuity.
Yes. And that is what happened. They took on Andrew Wiggins' contract, which in some considered, outside of John Wall's, the worst in the sport coming into this year. Russell Westbrook has gladly taken over that throne. But Andrew Wiggins' contract was considered one of the worst in the sport. No one was like, oh, this is going to be a checkbook title for the Warriors. They signed Andrew Wiggins, a serial underachiever in the NBA. No. Like, no one cared about it until he had a great game in the finals.
Right. So they made a great choice. Yeah. They're a win from winning it. And now it's Checkbook championship.
And what's crazy to me is, like, yes, shooting 0 for 9 in a finals game from 3-point range, especially considering you're the greatest 3-point shooter to ever live, especially considering you're shooting almost 50% from 3 in the prior 4 games. But if you actually watch the game and paid attention to more than just where the ball is, you can see the Celtics are playing almost 20-plus feet up on every defensive possession when they're guarding them because the gravity of his shooting makes them have to do so. The Warriors don't shoot almost 67% from 2-point range if the lane isn't completely cleared. The Celtics defense is one of the best defenses, especially team defenses, we've seen in a long time. I don't want to like crown them as the best defense we've seen, but in terms of size, in depth in size, there's not a team defensively that is that good on defense with that kind of size, with someone like Robert Williams, who is an elite NBA rim protector, and teams don't just shoot 67% on 2-point shots against the Celtics. That happens because Steph Curry is such a good 3-point shooter that they are selling out the 3-point line and just giving up anything else. And if they didn't just give up anything else, the Warriors don't win that game. If Steph Curry's reputation alone isn't that good, the Warriors aren't winning that game because they're not shooting that well from 2, and Andrew Wiggins isn't getting to the rim at will because he's getting favorable matchups because the Celtics are so damn concerned with having to guard Steph Curry 94 feet on the floor.
Right, which goes to another thing that kind of emerged from the last game, which, I mean, I think it's fair to throw it out there because he's definitely been their second best player, but the Wiggins for MVP thing, look, we'll see how it plays out. But again, everything you just said counters Wiggins for MVP.
Yes.
The rim, the lane, all these things are cleared by Steph Curry. He completely alters how a team plays them. And also, if basketball had hockey assists, or even just, well, there probably are analytics that I don't know
NBA.
about.
NBA.com has so many that it takes a crash course to learn.
Yeah, the offense he creates, and it may be another swing after that. Mm-hmm. He is the offense, he dictates the defense. So if he does that and then he still has a 40-point game and completely puts his team on his back, that game alone means he's MVP if they win the series, I think.
Because they had to steal that one on the road in a game in which everybody else looked dead on that team. Like, it looked early in game 4 that the Celtics were going to run away with it. And it had the same feel as game 3 early on.
Right. So then you combine that with, again, last game was actually a really good game for him, other than the thing he does best, the shot's not going down. He played great basketball. So I think that, I think it'll be a no-brainer. But, yeah, it's a little bit frustrating.
Yeah. That is the I don't want to be mean to First Take, but the First Takeifying of NBA discourse, where it's all about
– you can be mean to First Take.
Yeah.
It's okay.
Because it's a plague. It is a sports talk plague where it's just like, if you don't do this, if you don't score 45 points in game 5 of the NBA Finals, even though you carried the team on your back the entire time, you're not MVP. It's like, that's the reason why
Who is that on First Take? Is that like that's somebody like Sam? I missed him.
Oh, it's
there.
Like the corpse of Mad Dog Russo when he comes on Wednesdays, which you're going to be able to hear this skeleton of a man that they still pull out there to yell about John Havlicek being able to guard anybody today. Like, that's...
He doesn't say that.
Oh, he still claims, like, Bob Cousy would be, one of the greatest point guards, like, ever. Like, influential, yes. I will have that conversation. I love talking about the
great
influence
in his time. Great in his era.
I love talking about the eras individually. I love talking about the influence because, yes, if there's no Bob Cousy, we might not get a crossover for another 20-plus years in the way he dictated the ball-handling rules of the game. But, come on.
Yeah.
Let's be real here. And, like, yes, it's easy to pound someone for going 0 for 9, but if you actually watch the game, you will actually realize that what Steph Curry does, just with his reputation alone, it's like Barry Bonds in the year that he hit, like, a 1,300 OPS, that if you just take his walks, he leads the league in OPS without any slugging percentage, just the on-base, because his reputation is that terrifying that teams don't want to pitch to him. Like, he is in Barry Bonds' level of statistical greatness to where
without
other things get affected.
Without enhancement, as far as we know.
That's right. I don't know of any HGH with Steph Curry.
Steph's head has remained the same size throughout his career.
Exactly. If he has been taking it, he needs a refund because it hasn't been working very well. Coming up next, the choice is yours. I have not only hijacked the show for the weekend, or weekend, for the week, we're almost to the weekend, halfway there, but I have hijacked a staple segment of this show.
Nice.
And we'll hear that coming up next. Robbie and Rex Road, ESPN 102.5, 106.3 The Game, The Game Nashville app. Ah, yes. The moment we've all been waiting for this morning. Elijah Campbell here, filling in for Robbie Stanley on Robbie and Rex Road. And I get to hijack The Choice Is Yours. Michelle asked me yesterday, she's like, do you want to come up with the questions for it? I'm like, yeah, I want to come up with the questions for it. Like, I jumped to it. Maybe some expletives thrown in there because I was pretty excited.
I'm excited to hear your questions.
So do we want to start sports or non-sports? I'll let you guys do it from there. I can flip a coin. We can do this NFL style.
Let's do non-sports.
Okay. Non-sports. So I personally, an avid beer drinker. So for this question, like if you like cocktails, wine, whatever, drink of your choice. But we're talking settings here. Like I have a top five list of my favorite beers on the planet. Not just like brands of beers, okay? Because that's boring. But we can all relate to drink settings. The shower beer, the beach beer, ballpark beer, the post 8-hour shift beer, and the river beer are the five best beers on the planet. That's in no specific order, even though the post 8-hour shift beer hits a lot differently than the other four. It's in a category of its own. So my question to you, best drink settings. For me, it's beer. But you can take that wherever you
okay,
want.
Okay, so you're saying best drink and the setting.
Yes, like you are creating the setting.
I mean, it's pretty simple for me. It's the beach beer.
The beach beer's good. It's in the top five. It might be number three for me. That and the shower beer are very close.
Because the beach beer for me means that, you know, that you've gotten away, you're off.
Yes.
And if you actually have cold beer on the beach,
it is a game changer.
Yeah, you're winning pretty heavily. So yeah, that's pretty simple for me.
Okay, so mine is like a little twist off of it. So as soon as you said beach beer, I mean, obviously, who doesn't want to be on vacation right now?
Yes.
But mine is, and also this is a simple pleasure in life. You know, when you get off the beach and you shower and you're all clean and you're feeling like a fresh tan before you go to dinner. So it's that post-beach, pre-dinner in the hotel room, just vibing, relaxing beer.
Ooh, okay, that's good.
Good.
Very underrated. Yeah, especially the preparation beer, too. Like, I think that's outside looking in. That's in the same category there. It's like when you're about to go out and do something and you're getting ready, or like the people you're with are getting ready and you're just waiting.
The pregame.
Yes, exactly.
I would also,
the pre-festivities.
Honorable mention for me would be the pre-show every day, five shots of whiskey.
Tequila.
Too. Yeah.
How else do you
helpful.
Think we wake up to do this show?
Right, right. Those help
how
a lot.
Else we muster
oh,
the
shoot.
Energy.
I'm sorry.
Shoot. Yeah, I see what you
oops,
did there.
Yeah,
nice double entendre. All right. We'll go with sports. We'll alternate here. So, John Rothstein from CBS reported yesterday that Gonzaga and Michigan State, the Fighting Joe Rexroads, are in discussions to play on an aircraft carrier on Veterans Day. And that made me think because, A, I'm not a huge fan of the aircraft carrier game just because, like, a lot can go wrong with wind and stuff. However, if you could get one venue to see either two college or NBA teams play on that's not indoors, where would it be?
See, is this going to be humble brag time for me? Because I covered Michigan State, North Carolina on aircraft carrier in San Diego in 2011 and met President Obama.
See, that's a flex.
See,
that's a good flex.
I'm sorry.
I teed it up for you. Yeah, that's, like,
you flexed hard.
Yeah,
I flexed hard on
that. If
you
didn't do it, you would have missed an opportunity to flex. And obviously, this is our platform to do so.
This almost seems like I like set you up to ask that question. And by the way, we all had to leave we had to go to the aircraft carrier at like 6 a.m., of a night game and leave all of our computers all day on the aircraft carrier because the president was helicoptering in for the game. So like our computers had to be gone through by like, you know, Secret Service or whatever, like for the entire day. And
oh, wow.
Yeah.
So you had your Google search history examined by the Secret Service?
Apparently. Also,
dangerous game.
Also, Katie was like, you're going to wear a suit to that thing, right? And then everybody made fun of me. Because I wore a suit, and then it got.
I remember this story.
Yeah, you know this story, and it got caught on ESPN as Obama was going down, and Katie was like, "Good thing you listen, man." Because yeah, so now I've totally hijacked this with my humble brag.
That's funny.
You know, outdoor setting. Well, first of all, so we're not counting football.
Well, I mean, like basketball. For basketball specific,
okay.
Yeah.
A basketball. Do you have one, Michelle?
Yes.
Okay. I'm sorry. I'm just you know,
Joe's
talking about
just
my
blabbering
life
here.
Yeah.
Over there.
So anyway, in my day. Yeah, sorry.
So this is obviously hypothetical, right? Just
yes.
Like if you could see them anywhere. Okay, Wimbledon, Kentucky, Duke basketball.
Ooh, okay. Oh, that'd be interesting. In London, play
Wimbledon.
Wimbledon.
Listen, also, I'm starting the fund to pay for a ticket to London to see Michigan, Kentucky basketball this December.
Where are they playing that? What venue?
O2 Arena, probably.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah. But I think Wimbledon, just the, oh my gosh, it would be absolutely incredible.
Why not Tennessee? Because Tennessee always beats Kentucky?
No, because Tennessee, they're not even in that conversation. Oh. You're
like, well, we'd rather take on Duke.
Now that Coach K's gone.
But also, we kind of, like, if Coach K was still coaching.
Okay.
Right. So that's a part of the hypothetical.
I love the Wimbledon thing. That's awesome.
I mean, think
that
of all the blue.
Neat.
That would
that's
be
good.
So sick.
All right. You have one, obviously.
Oh, yeah. I want to see like two New York college teams, whether it be like St. John's.
Rucker?
At Rucker.
Yes.
You got to play it at Rucker. Rucker
that's,
or.
That's a great idea.
Or even if you want to get two smaller schools to play at Foster Park, which is the setting for Heaven is a Playground, which is my all-time favorite sports book. Yes.
Well, you know what? I can't. I don't have nothing totally different comes to mind, but I'll build on that and let's have little USC UCLA at Venice Beach.
Ooh,
those courts are awesome.
Yeah.
And yes, let's do that. So,
all right, outdoor basketball venues. I love it. So, in a non-sports one, the NFL has a new pizza partner reportedly, and that's Little Caesars. The $5 hot and ready has now hit the big time. So for the show, if we were to get a pizza sponsorship, what's your first place vote? Whether it embodies the show or not, or you just want free stuff from this pizza company.
So, this is confined to local then, or this is just whatever,
anywhere.
local or non-local?
Local would be fitting.
Detroit style.
Well, Emmy Squared, some good stuff, but you know.
Jets Pizza bangs.
Jets is great.
Yeah.
But mine is absolutely because it's maybe my favorite pizza in the world. I think it is. Slim and Huskies.
Ooh,
you make one of those with flavor. Pepperoni, mushroom, black, and green olives.
Ooh, okay. I love
You're
olives on a pizza.
Absolutely going to. It's the greatest, man.
I will never touch pineapple on a pizza, but I will double up on the olives on pizza.
They just had some nice pineapple pizza at the Vols baseball meltdown the other day. It was good.
Wow.
Pineapple on pizza is great. What are you laughing about in there?
Okay. So I'm obviously a New Yorker and we have the best pizza up there. But
I would agree.
But living, you know, in the South in Kentucky and now in Nashville, I haven't really found, you know, that traditional New York pizza. But a chain pizza that I'm absolutely obsessed with, and it would fit perfectly for our show because we're all children on here. Chuck E. Cheese pizza. And don't even tell me it is not the most amazing pizza ever. I also haven't had it since I was probably in elementary school.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
See, I've had it in parenting situations. Nah. Yeah. I mean,
Charles
I got the feels for Chuck E. Cheese, too. Don't get me wrong. And you're right.
I mean,
it's fitting.
It was very fitting for our show.
It is. Yeah.
And it was the first one that came to mind. So Chuck E. Cheese pizza sponsoring Robbie and Rex Rowe. Manifesting it.
Did you say Rex Rowe?
Rex Road. I did say Rex Rowe. Sorry.
Also, someone on the text line just said, and Michelle, FYI, it's Wimbledon, not Wimbledon. Did you say Wimbledon?
Wimbledon.
There's okay. A ton of Wimbles.
I didn't think she said Wimbledon. What's yours?
Mine? Oof. See, I love Jets. If we're doing like national chains Jets, but I like the idea of the Slim and Huskies local flavor there.
And just olives on pizza in general.
Yeah, if there's olives on it, like sign me up. Yeah.
Absolutely.
You have another one?
If we can do it in a minute.
Do it.
All right, let's do it. Because we talk about dynasties, Warriors potentially becoming one here, and the Lightning are staring down the barrel of a three-peat. So which pro or college teams have made the best almost dynasties, which is the best 5 to 10 year stretches where a team never actually won a championship.
Didn't win a championship,
but was good enough.
Because I was
that good every year. Like the 90s Bills, early 2000s Eagles,
yeah,
the 90s Knicks.
Because I think of like the Pistons, a lot of people wouldn't call it a dynasty, but they you know, they were in like the Eastern Conference Finals 5 years. They could have won it three or four times. They won two.
Yeah.
But I guess, I don't know. Is that a dynasty?
They won them. So in this scenario.
Yeah, so in this scenario, yes. Non-championship.
I can't think that quick off the top of my head.
Well, I think you gave away. I mean, the obvious answer to me is the Bills.
Is the Bills, the 90s Bills.
I mean, they were.
They went to four and lost.
And they were absolutely the best team the first year. They should have won it. You know, Scott Norwood, wide right? Wide left?
Wide right.
Yeah, wide right. Yeah.
Wide left is Florida State.
Give me some other ones, though. I don't know.
The late 60s, early 70s Minnesota Vikings, the Fran Tarkenton-led Vikings, went to a few Super Bowls, were always good.
Yeah, the Vikings always lost those Super Bowls. The Broncos were this for a while, and then they finally, then like later, Elway actually beats Favre, which was one of the greatest, most gratifying Super Bowls to watch. In college, you know, Duke for a, that's the thing. There's a lot of situations where it's like for a while, and then they break through.
They were that
I mean, when
team.
Krzyzewski didn't, like when they got blown out in 90, they had been dynastic, right, for about 8 years, hadn't won it. So, but then, of course, they did.
What about Michigan State? When's the last time they won it? But then they've made so many Final Fours.
Yeah.
I feel like you could.
Yeah, but they won the one.
2010 to 2022, I think would be a fair stretch.
Yeah, yeah. So Izzo, I think, has the most Final Fours since, but he only has the one title. But he has the one, so, you know.
So it still counts because it's hard.
See, that's a tough question. That's one we can think about throughout the rest of the show, too, because the text line's actually blowing up with that as well. So we can continue that. Derrick Henry made one thing clear at Titans practice yesterday. We'll talk about that as well as you're listening to Robbie and Rexford. I'm Elijah Campbell filling in for Robbie Stanley here on ESPN 102.5, 106.3 The Game, The Game Nashville app.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Game night's fun until someone spends 5 minutes lining up one shot. Chalk, breathe, re-chalk, still aiming. While they figure it out, I fire up Chumba Casino. I can spin anywhere, anytime, and there's always a new social casino game every week. Spins happen way faster than that shot. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.